It's January 30th, 2019. Welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum. First, we'll hear from Omar Sultan, and he's here to tell us about Accelerate HI. And then we'll hear from Ben Trevino and Stephanie Chang about the community collaboration project called the HART Sustainability Mobility Lab, or, which I like better, Sumo Lab. First, I want to let you know that the tech entrepreneur and investor Michael Powers will be a guest speaker over at the next Maui Tech Ohana presented by the Maui Economic Development Board. The meeting will be held at the Kohana over at the Maui Research and Technology Center on Wednesday. That's February 6th. That's next week, Wednesday, from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. And I got to add this, you know, got free poo-poos and refreshments. And, of course, you can go to www.mauitechohana.com to find out more information. Next up, Omar Sultan from Sultan Ventures. He's been working on this project called Accelerate HI for a while now, but then there's going to be some cool announcement. Welcome to the show, Omar.
Thanks, Bert. Love being on here. Yeah. Always love chatting with you.
So I know you you launched Accelerate HI a while back, and I think it's a really cool program. It really kind of helps address the needs of the rest of the community that perhaps not involved with Accelerator, but what are you, are you relaunching this, or is it a new thing? You got an open house, or what's going on?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we have an open house February 7th, next week, Thursday, I believe. We're relaunching Accelerate Hawaii, or Accelerate HI, XLR8HI. Mm-hmm. Relaunching that next week at our open house, kind of branding it as Hawaii's Entrepreneurship Center. So let's say that you're an entrepreneur, let's say that you're a startup, you're not part of the accelerators, or maybe you're interested in going to one of the accelerators. Like, we want to be sort of one of those options, or like a destination for those that they can turn to this entrepreneurship center.
Now, are there, let's say, qualifications or criteria upon which they can participate, and does it have to be the technology or manufacturing or anything under the sun?
Nope, that's the beauty of it, right? It's Hawaii's Entrepreneurship Center. We launched Accelerate Hawaii in 2012, so it has been around for a while, and it's all kind things, right? If you're a lifestyle company, you know, this is probably or a lifestyle entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a high tech or high growth company, I mean, really, we're offering all kinds of services and resources to those types of entrepreneurs and startups. So it's meant for the broader community.
So you've had a number of workshops that mm-hmm. have already gone on. What are some of the examples of workshops that you have presented, and would they carry over into sort of the new and improve Accelerate HI?
Yeah, some of those are definitely going to carry over. We're also adding to the offerings. So we're going to have talk story series. We're going to have workshops on 3D printing. Previous ones that we've done are like financials and fundamentals, or how to present effectively, right? Not necessarily just for money, but how to present your idea in an effective and engaging manner. We've done workshops, as you said, across all of Hawaii. So we've done it on the Big Island. We've done it on Maui. We've even done workshops on Lanai.
Mm-hmm, And how do you sustain this? I mean, I know you love the community and you do a lot for, you know, just out of love. But, yeah. I mean, is there like how do you sustain this? Is there a payment to participate, or do you, I don't know, take equity?
No, we don't take any equity as part of Accelerate Hawaii, right? So in part, it's sustained by the collaborations that we do with other entities. So we don't pretend like we're the only game in town, right? So if we're doing stuff on Maui, for example, we definitely love partnering with our friends out there at MEDB, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee maybe sponsorships by some of the other partners that you collaborate with?
Definitely. For some of the classes, there is a small nominal fee. We help to underwrite those so that they're not too expensive. We definitely focus on inclusion, as I'm sure you know. So for women, minorities, et cetera, there's definitely opportunities for scholarships.
And this is not something that you're getting funded by the state with any kind of program
in
existence. Yep. So this is something that you've come up, created yourself, and need to find some sustainability model to keep it going.
Right. I mean, as you know, we've been around for a long time, and our whole goal is helping with economic development, if you will, mm-hmm, right? Helping mm-hmm. with economic self-determination for individuals, helping with economic self-sufficiency. So that's why, like, as you said in the beginning, this isn't just meant for a certain type or class of entrepreneur or startup, right? From small businesses to high growth to lifestyle businesses. Anyone that actually wants or is interested in innovation or entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. like we want to be able to sort of help guide them into the appropriate areas that they need to go or their appropriate partners.
Any entrepreneurs that have come out of the program already that you have your eye on to see what they're going to come up with?
Yes, definitely. And some of them are in other programs that we run. So I see.
So it might be a little bit of a feeder kind of program?
It could be, yes, yeah. But even for those that don't want to go into an accelerator, right, but they just want a resource and they want that guidance and that help, mm-hmm. like we want to be able to help with them.
Oh, very good. Okay, so tell me again, when and where is this open house?
So February 7th, it'll be in our office, 904th Street Mall, Suite 1888. It's an Accelerate Hawaii relaunch and open house. So I hope to see all of you listening there.
And what, you always have pizza over there?
We always have poo-poos, yes.
Okay, I'll be there.
We also have a fantastic sunset, as you know.
That's good. So, okay, I'll put it on my calendar. And, of course, I'll put – is there a link up that people can refer to? I can put up on our show notes?
Yeah. If you go to acceleratehawaii.com, XLR8HI.com, there's definitely ways that you can RSVP there.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Omar, for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll take a short break. And when we return, we'll be joined by Ben Trevino and Stephanie Chang. And they're here to tell us about the Sustainability Mobility Lab. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and Kaiser Permanente.
What I really love to do is binge listen to programs that I can't catch because I'm working or busy running errands. So I'll come home and I'll listen to Radiolab podcasts for hours. Binge listening to Hawaii Public Radio is my guilty pleasure.
Member supported Hawaii Public Radio. Radio with vision. Listen and see.
And welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. Now joining us is Ben Trevino and Stephanie Chang. Ben is the sustainability planner over at the Honolulu Authority for Rapid Transportation, also known as HART. And of course, meanwhile, Stephanie is the founder and principal of Stephanie Chang Design Inc., a graphic design studio devoted to user-centric design with a focus on sustainability, public interest, and social innovation. Want to welcome you both to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hi, Bert.
Hi, Bert. Thanks for having us on.
Now, you did correct me, and it is not sustainability because I liked it, you know, I kind of like it rolling off my tongue that way, but it's the Sustainable Mobility Lab. And I think that's pretty cool. And, of course, I love the abbreviation as Sumo Lab, but maybe, Ben, give me a brief history as to how that started. Where did this lab idea start from?
That's a good question. I will try to give the abbreviated.
Yeah, okay.
History.
I could
probably go back to, you know, the night that I was born.
Spare me.
Thanks for having us on. Thanks for that question. I think the Sustainable Mobility Lab is a work in progress. And so, you know, what we talk about today is, as you will see through our process, you know, always developing. And that was certainly the case when we started it. You know, it was first and foremost our, as HART's, implementation of our sustainability policy. Mm-hmm. So it's long been a goal of HART since before I joined to kind of highlight and really leverage the sustainability aspects of the rail project. And not many people think about it this way, but really at the core of it, it's a piece of sustainable infrastructure and arguably one of the most important ones when it comes to our mobility system overall. Thanks to the excellent work of my predecessor in my position, Aki Marceau, we have a robust sustainability program that I was able to kind of step into, and some pieces that she had put in place that we were able to grow. And our leadership at HART, particularly Andy Robbins, who's our CEO, really came in with sustainability as a priority. So one of the first things that we did was go to the board and adopt a formal sustainability policy. And the lab was conceived as our way of implementing this and bringing innovation into the project at the same time as sustainability.
So, you know, we hear sustainability used a lot of times in a lot of different kind of contexts. But when you talk about sustainability in the context of HART, are you talking about, you know, sort of maintaining a certain level of ridership? I mean, what does sustainability mean in terms of HART?
Yeah, I think that's one of the essential questions in sustainability as a field or as a movement or as a discipline. It means so many different things to so many people because fundamentally, in my view, and Steph and I talk about this a lot, sustainability is about systems, right? And it's about balance across systems and can these systems continue to work because they are balanced in a way that allows for them to persist.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as we'll get into a little bit in a little bit later in this conversation, those systems are primarily about people. You know, to the extent that we are able to influence them and we care about them, these are systems of people integrated with other, you know, other systems, ecological and transportation, as we'll discuss. So what sustainability means to a project like HART, I think, is you would look at it in terms of where is the biggest impact that this project can have on the various things that are involved in sustainability, like energy use, greenhouse gas emissions, what's our water situation, what does that look like,
mm-hmm.
What's our financial sustainability look like, what is our economic situation, and you know, as we see in the city's resiliency office, resilience is a question in sustainability too. What happens when we encounter shocks and stresses, and how do we recover? Those are all rolled into this sustainability idea. And for me, as I understand it, I think one of the things that the biggest impact that I believe that HART can have in terms of sustainability is in ridership, is in, you know, maximizing ridership, maximizing the use of this infrastructure for communities, because that means that it's useful to the communities. They're able to kind of change behavior to work around HART, and the impact of that from a transportation standpoint is that we know when we look at greenhouse gases and fuels and fossil fuel use that transportation sector is one of the trickiest areas, if not the trickiest area to solve. We've been making a lot of progress on the generation sector when it comes to using renewables over fossil fuels. But on the transportation sector, it's a really difficult problem because so much of our transportation is wrapped up in internal combustion engine, mm-hmm. single occupancy types mm-hmm. of uses. So when you have a shared transit-based use that's electrified on a grid that is becoming increasingly renewable, then you can start to have a really big impact on how the transportation needs of Honolulu start to become more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Now, Stephanie, you know, Ben is such a great thinker, and I would love to hear how you got involved with this project as a graphic designer. And I think, you know, as much as we talk about sustainability and the resilience, I think it's how do you present those ideas? And I think graphic design is a really great way of making it visual. So how did you guys connect?
Yeah, well, I love telling a story, which is in the early part of 2018. This is several months before Ben approached me about working with him on this sustainable mobility lab. We were both at an AIJ event. It's mm-hmm. American Institute of Graphic Arts. Lots of people in the room whom I respect and love and adore. The room is full of designers. And Ben was there. And I took a photo with Ben and I posted it. And I said, "This is my favorite. I'm with my favorite designer." So okay. Ben, to me, thinks
you're
like
pitching him, right?
Ben thinks like a designer to me. And of course, you know, he doesn't have any formal design training or art training. He has actually a really interesting and varied past professional experience, which I think rolls itself in so nicely into mm-hmm. the building out of this lab. And so as a design thinker in Ben, I think he saw the possibilities of working with someone who works constantly in creative process. The lab, as you know, is about learning together. It's a creative process. And with a lot of creative process, there are unknowns. And the one thing that I call on as, you know, a working designer in the community with for myself and with my clients is I rely on a faith in the process. You know, a client might hire me and we both know we're going to come up with a logo, but we don't know what that logo is. But there's a process we go through, and it gives me confidence that we will go through it and attain a result. And the client also has faith that in going through this process, there will be a result. And hopefully it's amazing. But yeah, and so I think Ben saw the value of working with someone who's, you know, working with creative process on a daily basis. But I would argue Ben is also working in a creative process all the time as well.
Well, you know, I've known Ben, you know, for quite a while now. And, you know, initially it was through kind of coding and data visualization and how to tell stories with data and code. And I think some of the things that you produced, even when you were back at UHERO, were really kind of mind-expanding.
I agree.
So I think it's a great opportunity to collaborate. Now, I'm kind of curious. There's a lot of the concept of user-centric design.
Mm-hmm.
And also in terms of you folks getting together and then kind of bring in the connection with Code for America. And how did that lend itself to the process of your sort of discovery?
Well, you know, Code for America is an organization that's all about innovation in government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I find so fascinating is with our fellowship, they sort of took a chance on us because this project did not have necessarily a technological product in the end. The product that we created in participating in this fellowship was the lab. So I really just appreciate their willingness to kind of take a risk with us and to kind of go beyond, I think, technology as a solution. I feel like they're moving into the next stage of their growth as an organization and seeing that solutions are not necessarily always technology based. I feel like at one point, you know, technology was the solution for everything. And I think they're evolving beyond that. And so sort of their sponsorship of our project, I think, reflects that. But yeah, Code for America, we were so grateful we were sent there for 3 days to get trained on their principles of user-centered design. And mm-hmm. really what that really means is you're designing for the user's needs. You're not designing something because it's going to look good or because it's based on what you think would be good as a good solution. It's based in getting information and data from the people whom you're designing for. And so one thing that I think it's sort of a best practice, I would say, that maybe some of the best design works for the most vulnerable populations. And if it can work for them, then it's good for everyone. But what I love, Ben and I sort of landed on this statement, which we sort of hinged on throughout the formation of this lab, which is we're not designing for the most vulnerable. We are designing for ourselves at our most vulnerable. And we just love mm-hmm. the way that felt. You know, it wasn't about us versus them and, oh, they need this. It's like, we are them.
Mm-hmm.
We, too, are very easily at any moment vulnerable, too. And how can we design for ourselves at our most vulnerable?
Yeah, that philosophy in and of itself is very inclusive because it's not saying, like you said, them versus us. It's like, we all are in vulnerable situations, and how do we design for everybody who might be perhaps encountering that sort of situation in their life?
And I think that idea of inclusion and inclusivity is a real strength of Code for America. I think it's something that we, you know, I don't know that we realized how good Code for America was at providing a framework and support for work that is intended to be inclusive, but it was certainly an interest of ours. I think we recognized that going in,
mm-hmm.
And when we went to Code for America, I was blown away by how good they were at it. You know, how much they had reflected on it, how much they reflected it in their organization, and how they made that connection between user-centered design, the principles of democracy, and what it means to have you know, a government that really serves the people and a public sector that reflects services for the people and statements like we should be building with and not for. And I think to Stephanie's earlier point about, you know, we design for ourselves that are most vulnerable, that's really an extension of that same principle, right? Like we can't go to a group of people and say, hey, here, we've made this solution for you.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we are in that community, but we don't believe that we are a part of it, then, you know, you're still 1 or 2 degrees separated mm-hmm. from that experience. And so it's only in that ability to say, like, no, I'm a part of this group and we're designing this together, that you come up with the kinds of solutions that really are valuable to people, that people can really use.
So as you have gone through kind of a fellowship program with Code for America and perhaps got exposed to their best practices, I want to find out more about how that has actually applied and impacted the development of the Sumo Lab. So I want to hold that thought. We'll be right back at this short break to continue our conversation with both Ben Trevino and Stephanie Chang. We're talking about the Sustainable Mobility Lab, and it's called also called the Sumo Lab. And this is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to St. Andrew's Schools, which includes the Priory School for Girls, the Prep for Boys, and Queen Emma Preschool.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Ben Trevino and Stephanie Chang. We're talking about community collaboration and the Sumo Lab. Right before the break, we were talking about Code for America. And actually, Ben, you know, you're pitching the idea to Code for America to develop, help, you know, to help develop the Sumo Lab, and how do they bring some of their concepts and ideas around the user-centric design? How does that apply to your thoughts of the Sumo Lab? I mean, tell me, how did that ultimately result in your now sort of taking the Sumo Lab to the community, right? I mean, so there was kind of a bit of a launch back in December, and Code for America came, and it was a pretty good gathering of folks and a presentation by both of you, and I was very impressed. So how do you now continue to take that on the road? I mean, what is it that you are now trying to achieve at the Sumo Lab?
Well, I can give, you know, maybe to partially answer that question, I want to bring up something that is part of Code for America's national program, their brigades.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, you are very familiar with the brigade program, being the founder of our Honolulu Brigade. And the fellowship program that we participated in really grew out of of the brigade movement and the recognition that there are people in the community that not only are they interested in supporting the work of the public sector and working with government, that really that's the only way that change can meaningfully happen and that the work of government can meaningfully be done. It has to be done in partnership with people, with the citizens of the public, in order for that to happen. And the brigades, which are volunteer groups, are really an asset in making that work. So we really looked to the brigade model as inspiration. How is it that we can be looking at the broader community and be looking at that input as something that we can take in this effort to make the rail more sustainable, or to implement a sustainability program around the rail?
I would like to add to that. So, you know, Bert asked the question, how did we implement user-centered design, which is Code for America's training, into our work? Definitely it impacted the 6 months where we were concepting the lab, which I won't go into now. But what I do want to say is the lab itself, the concept of the lab, is in itself user-centered. So, you know, we haven't had a chance yet to talk about what the lab is. Mm-hmm. And really the lab is about learning together. And in learning together and in going through an experience together, we feel that is what actually builds connections between people and builds community. And so the process that we've sort of conceived of is that we would go through 6 month sprints that tackle various topics or concepts related to mobility.
Mm-hmm.
So these could be things like traffic or parking, things that affect the quality of all of our lives, where we bring a community together and they will either try to together come up with a solution to maybe experiment and try out a quick thing, you know, or engage in an activity that helps them to better understand that topic, which then informs a mobility system, a sustainable mobility system for Hawaii. So for us, it's like, I feel like sustainability in Hawaii and really the conversation about climate change is gaining momentum, but what are the ways we're really engaging people to participate. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like this lab is an opportunity to really engage and give voice for people to create and form a more sustainable Hawaii, a mobility system for Hawaii. So each sprint informs and better defines what a sustainable mobility system is for Hawaii.
Have you have you kind of thought through what your first 6 month sprint is going to be focused on?
We are in progress about that, but as
I know, I would guess that there are probably a multitude of things that you could actually tackle. So the question becomes, mm-hmm. what are you going to do first?
Right.
Out of all the things that could perhaps be part of that first sprint, what are you going to focus on?
Well, go ahead, Ben.
I think we might be asking ourselves a slightly different question, or maybe framing the challenge of the Sustainable Mobility Lab a little differently. What I'll share about it is that we really break down the sprint into three distinct phases. One is about connection, and that speaks to, I think, what Stephanie was talking about in terms of strengthening communities, bringing those bonds together. The next is about experimentation. Experimentation is really where the core of the lab mm-hmm. work happens, where the learning happens, mm-hmm. right, through the experiment. And then the last part is taking what is learned and then refining the vision of what our sustainable system is going to look like.
Is that all contained in the 6 month sprint?
I think all three steps. Yeah, we'll be continuously working on the three steps. The way we think about what we work on mm-hmm. is in terms of these questions that are driven by the vision of sustainable mobility. So when we went out and did the engagement with the community over the first 6 months of the fellowship, we distilled out the comments that we heard about what people were concerned about in their communities, what they saw as being important in the mobility system, and extracted about 15 or 16 different elements of what would make up a sustainable system of mobility. Mm-hmm. And from those elements, we framed questions that we thought were relevant to mobility and relevant potentially to the rail. And those questions are what we're trying to learn more about. Mm-hmm. So as opportunities to come up and answer one of those questions, say, you know, what would it mean to have people-centered mobility? How do you connect across multiple different modes like ride hailing and transit and walking and biki? And how do you have a continuous integrated experience? That's a question that we'd want to learn about. You know, what types of activities benefit that? And so we have a collection of these questions, and what we're really looking for in this sprint is what are our opportunities to learn more about them.
Stephanie, I mean, like in the last few seconds here, where can people sort of keep up with the development of the Sumo Lab?
Oh, gosh. I knew this question was coming. Yeah, for various reasons, I guess, I don't know if these are legal or bureaucratic ones, we don't have a website for the Sumo Lab at this point, but you can definitely contact Ben Trevino and myself via email. And Ben, will you give your email address?
Well, I'll put it up on our show notes for later on this evening. Ben Trevino is a sustainability planner over at HART. And Stephanie Chang is the founder of Stephanie Chang Design, Inc. We want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Bert. It's so good to see you.
Thank you, Bert. Always a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we will talk to a couple of the companies going through the Accelerate UH program. If you missed any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. And if you have any comments or suggestions, feel free to email me at bitemarks@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at bitemarks. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HPR One every Wednesday or anytime on the HPR app, iTunes, and Stitcher. You stay awesome, and we will see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe. I've no wish to worry you.